It's Tuesday evening, the 3rd of November. You're very welcome to the Inside Politics podcast from the Irish Times. I'm Pat Leahy. Now, Taoiseach, Taoiseach even, everybody calls him Taoiseach, but he's the Taoiseach. Leo Varadkar has just finished his question and answer session in the Dáil on the recent controversy over the leaking of the GP's new contract back in 2019, which controversy has transfixed politics in recent days and which the government is hoping it can now put behind them. Well, as I say, the Taoiseach has recently finished in the Dáil. To discuss this, I am joined by two of our political staff, Jack Horgan-Jones and Jennifer Bray. Good evening and thanks for joining us. Jennifer, you were watching the Dáil exchanges which have just concluded. What did you think of them, or will you take us through them first?
I'll take you through them. Yeah, no problem. So the Taoiseach Leo Varadkar, who once again was referred to as the Taoiseach. He's constantly being referred to the Taoiseach by everybody.
I'd say he hates that.
Oh, I'd say he does. I mean, you know. Anyway, moving on. So he gave a defence of his leaking of this GP deal to the NAGP. And we know a lot of the backstory. So he took to his feet in the Dáil and talked about, I suppose he started off talking about the place of GPs in the community, about his own background in health, about how the government had decided to deal with the IMO. He referenced very early on that there was a bitter rivalry between the IMO and between the NAGP, and that the aim of his sending this document to the former president of the NAGP was designed to keep them engaged, involved and informed. So he gave us a little bit of the background in relation to it. He talked about how when he became Taoiseach, he made it clear that he had what he called, and I'm sure you remember this, unfinished business in the Department of Health. And he said he wanted to use his influence in his role as Taoiseach to secure a new deal, a new GP deal. In relation to this, he talked about the backing he had from his colleagues at the time, Pascal Donoghue, Simon Harris, and the funding that he hoped to secure. So having gone through, I suppose, some of the context behind it, he talked then a little bit about how at the time when the deal was being finalised, a lot of the opposition TDs and deputies in the chamber would have been critical of the fact that the deal had not been published and the deal maybe had not been shared. And he said that it was pointed out at the time that actually this presented somewhat of an unfair disadvantage to other GPs who hadn't seen it. So that was kind of him defending, once again, his sending it on to the NAGP. So he talked then a little bit about the circumstances surrounding why he gave this document to Matthew O'Toole. He said it was provided on a confidential basis, publication had been imminent, and that this was going to be supplied to the NAGP. But the crucial part of what he was saying was that it did not confer any advantage to the NAGP. That was the point that he was very keen to point out. He said,
and this distancing, Jen, sorry, I thought this was, you know, one of the centerpieces of his contribution was this repeated and actually, you know, quite edgy distancing of himself from Dr. Matthew O'Toole.
Exactly. Yeah, he did talk a bit about how, to paraphrase him, sometimes people who say they're very close to you, who maybe talk up their influence or talk up their access to you, maybe it isn't always so, that there are friends and then there are friends. I think the what he's saying there is that there are friends who say to other people that there are, but then there are actual close friends who probably do have more access. So he was kind of, I suppose, distancing himself in that way from Matthew O'Toole. I think he was very keen to point out as well, from his perspective, that it had been alleged over the last couple of days, as he's put it, that there was something improper or something indeed criminal about what had happened. But that, he says, was absolutely not the case. He said that some of the opposition had said that basically the former head of the NAGP had been a Varadkar cheerleader, and he said that that wasn't the case when the NAGP had said that basically criticised Fine Gael's record specifically in relation to health. So he was pointing out that how could it be the case that this person is a cheerleader for him or for Fine Gael when they're out protesting outside the Dáil saying the exact opposite and saying, criticising their records. Now, Farrakhan did, despite defending himself and distancing himself from Matthew O'Toole, say that he recognised that the way in which he provided this information perhaps was a little bit too informal. He said he probably should have brought them in around the table and talked them through the document, even if it was something that was done on a page-by-page basis. And he also regretted the fact that it caused so much controversy and I suppose the fact that many of his colleagues have had to go out and bat for him over the last couple of days when over an issue which really, I suppose, everybody wishes had never had happened.
He was determined to, seemed to me, looking in, to strike a note of humility that requires a certain effort from him, I think. I was also struck by the, it was a different approach that many of the opposition TDs adopted, rather than ask him, you know, whole string of questions wrapped up in a speech and thus allowing him to answer the ones he wanted and discard the ones that he didn't. Many of them sought to kind of interrogate him in a more forensic way. And there was a number of bad senior counsel impressions on the part of several TDs. But actually some of them did quite get at him, I thought, and did make him quite uncomfortable in parts. I'm thinking particularly of Piers Doherty on his relationship with Dr. O'Toole and Paul Murphy on much the same subject.
Yeah, definitely. I think that the tactics deployed by the opposition had varying success this evening. So we've seen less of the usual, less of the usual speechifying, more of the for maybe direct questions. You know, not wasting any time, not much preamble. Just did you do X? Did you do Y? Etc. etc. And getting straight to it, which as a journalist I welcome because I'm always keen to just hear an answer to a question as opposed to a politician's long ramble. But I don't think it worked for everybody. I don't think that everybody's contribution perhaps went in the same way. But I do agree that I think that the strongest questioning came from Piers Doherty and Sinn Féin, particularly when he talked about the fact that the NAGP had said they were in extensive consultation with the Department of Health and with other stakeholders and with the government. And he said there was no record of any such meetings. And we've been trying to get to the bottom of it here in the Irish Times, a few of my colleagues and myself. And I thought he was quite good on that. I thought he was very clear and it was very easily understandable. Other opposition heads, perhaps not so much. I wasn't quite sure where Éan Ó-Riordan was going with some of his questions. And if you asked me to summarise his point now, I wouldn't actually be able to. But notwithstanding that, I think
his point was that he could have been a senior counsel if he wanted.
Was that? Well, I missed that. But I suppose just to go back to another point you...
Or maybe an extra in Ally McBeal.
Or maybe...
Younger listeners can look that up.
I actually do remember Ally McBeal. But the one thing I would say then about the Sinn Féin opposition is they were at pains to use the word friend. I think they used the word friend around 15 times. I was counting and then I lost track. So, you know, they said, you gave this document to your friend. So I think that they got across the point that they wanted to. They didn't even necessarily have to get any gotcha questions. The point they made was quite obvious. You gave this to your friend. And, you know, in relation to the other point you made about Leo Varadkar, perhaps trying to portray a little bit of humility, a little bit of, you know, being apologetic for what happened. He did say that he has been guilty of errors of judgment in his time as a politician. I think there was a bit of sniggering at that. He said, obviously, that he was sorry. He said that while he has been guilty of errors of judgment over his career as a politician, he's never been motivated by anything that could be construed as corruption or anything negative in that regard, that it was an error of judgment, but it was motivated by the best reasons. So, you know, for him, I think it was a strong enough defence. I think he'll probably have done enough at the moment to maybe get through this, but it has, I think, weakened him a little bit, and it has portrayed him in a light as being, you know, this hashtag Leo the Leak stuff that sticks. You know, it does stick.
It is a bit sticky, Jack. A lot of the questioning from TDs in the earlier part of it, at least, referenced text messages and WhatsApp messages and screen grabs of them that have been released kind of almost as the debate was going on, or maybe a little bit before it. You've been looking at those and you've written up a report which is online now, but bring us up to speed on them if you can.
So the people will be familiar that this story emerged through Village Magazine over the weekend, and obviously a lot of the reporting that they had was based on text messages either sent by the then Taoiseach or about the then Taoiseach. And since that report came out, they've kind of been heavily trailing this suggestion or this idea that, you know, there was more to come. And we saw during the course of the debate, and indeed many of us have been circulating now at this stage, a PDF of further screen grabs of the same kind of thing, really. There's some screenshots taken from what appears to be Leo Varadkar's mobile. There's other screenshots which are more kind of characterizations of Matthew O'Toole's relationship with the then Taoiseach, now Taoiseach, by Matthew O'Toole. And then there's some other Twitter direct messages between Matthew O'Toole and Simon Harris, the then Minister for Health, in which Matthew O'Toole is seeking access effectively to the document which he ultimately gleaned from Leo Varadkar. The question obviously is, you know, do these new exchanges add massively to the sum total of human knowledge about the interaction? I would say on balance, probably not. There are some rather, you know, I would hesitate to say damaging, but certainly not positive characterizations of the relationship between Matthew O'Toole and Leo Varadkar. But I hasten that again, these are by Matthew O'Toole, where he suggests that, you know, Leo is constantly pulling strings for me and stuff like that, which, because it's not really a characterization that brings it too close to the front door of Leo Varadkar, it's not something that was said by or to him, he was able to kind of dance around that quite nimbly in the Dáil tonight and say, look, I'm here to account for my own actions. I'm here and I can't speak to what other people have said about me. And he appealed to his fellow deputies in the House and said, I'm sure people have effectively invoked your name in vain as a friend before, and that's more or less what happened to me here. The direct messages to Simon Harris, again, you know, do they reveal any wrongdoing or anything improper on behalf of the Minister for Health? No, they don't really, because he seems to have been asked for a document. He seems to have politely, effectively said no. And again, while later on in the screen grabs, there's a suggestion that Matthew O'Toole is currently meeting with Simon Harris for lunch in Wicklow. Simon Harris is very quick, first in the form of a statement, and then latterly this evening in the Dáil to say that this never happened, you know. So
he stood up in the Dáil after the questions to Varadkar were completed, and he said, you know, for the record, he said, I never had lunch with Dr. O'Toole, which is in conflict with what Dr. O'Toole is claiming in his messages to somebody else that have now come into the public domain. And I suppose it supports the idea that Leo Varadkar was trying to convey, it seems to me, in the Dáil this evening, which is that he was not as close to Dr. O'Toole as Dr. O'Toole was suggesting to other people. I mean, he has he thrown him under a bus? Is that putting it too strongly? He certainly distanced himself very dramatically from him and pointed out that politicians were well used to people exaggerating their relationships with them.
Yeah, I think that, you know, as Jen correctly pointed out, there were a lot of people rushing to describe Matthew O'Toole as a friend of Leo Varadkar. I'm not sure that Leo Varadkar would still describe him as a friend if he ever did, after what has transpired over the last few days.
He said he's a friend, but not a close friend.
He's a fella you see once or twice a year, exactly, yeah. I think this kind of goes to the core of some parts of this story, and kind of how the Taoiseach has not managed to escape without a mark on him, but has managed to substantially survive this story, which is that when you get away from the core allegation here, which has been proven to be true and has been problematic and damaging for him, which is that he leaked a document. A lot of the extraneous stuff, a lot of the padding, a lot of how it was presented originally in Village that he had broken the law, for example, a lot of, you know, the fact that, you know, a lot of the colour relied on other people's characterizations of their relationship with him. You know, ultimately, he's been able to say, I'm not accountable for that, or that's not true, or it's false, or it's defamatory, which has given him this kind of arsenal of language and excuses to deploy around the topic, meanwhile acknowledging that the central accusation was true. So he's been able to kind of, I think, limit the damage to a large degree by the way it's played out. And the timing of this plays into it as well. I think this was always a case of where he had to kind of get from Saturday to today without anything significant new emerging. And if he was able to get into Wednesday or Tuesday evening, as it is now, and get through the doll, which I think he largely has, the political agenda inevitably moves on, and there's a massive political event coming down the tracks. It's not in Ireland, but it is a US election, and that's going to eat up a huge amount of bandwidth.
It sounds like the excitement is already growing in your household there about the events later this evening, Jack.
She's a huge Trump fan.
I've thought since the weekend that unless there was material benefit to Dr. Tulare's organisation could be demonstrated, unless there was clear evidence of law breaking, unless Leo Varadkar was caught or was demonstrated to be telling untruths to either the public or to his colleagues in government about this, that what was there, while damaging, wasn't sufficient to destroy him. If I'm right about that, then this evening leaves him damaged but intact.
Yeah, I think that he is certainly damaged in a narrow sense. I think that his authority within his own party will be damaged. His capacity to have moral authority the next time someone steps out of line, like Dara Murphy or, you know, the Maria Bailey incident. I think that he will certainly have to mind his P's and Q's around Fianna Fáil. And I think that the opposition are going to use this as a mallet to beat him over the head with repeatedly. And it will stick with people who already had this kind of sense of Leo the leak, you know. Beyond that, I'm not sure it's a story that has massively cut through. You know, someone said to me today that this is a story that politicians and journalists care about and nobody else really. And I think that might well be true.
Jen?
Yeah, I would agree with that, to be honest with you. I think galling to see a lot of the politicians pointing at each other, demanding to know, have you ever leaked anything? Have you ever leaked anything? And then kind of, well, I haven't leaked that much. Everybody leaks. Politicians leak all the time to journalists. But why are they leaking? They're leaking information so that it gets to the public. Like, that's the point here. They're not telling you or me or Jack something so that you, me or Jack will have this, you know, amazing nugget of information. Most of the time, it's in order for us to do our jobs as journalists and, you know, get information out there that otherwise we would not be able to. And so much of the conversation has gotten caught up on the merits or lack of merits around leaking. Now, I know this was a different type of leak altogether. It's not to a journalist. It was to a representative body, and I fully accept that. But it's just a bit, you know, hearing people standing up in the dole demanding to know what they've leaked, when they've leaked it, why or whatever, you know. Everybody knows this is what happens, and I think we should all be adult enough to accept that now. I would think that, provided, and this is the case anytime there is a controversy of any hue and it looks like you're getting to the final point of it, it's always the case that when you think that someone's safe, it's always on the condition that there's nothing else coming out the next day. And this is true here. I think probably, I would imagine, that it will blow over. I think he has been helped by the fact that the US elections are tonight and everybody is gearing up for this and getting their plans ready for tonight, and it's going to be all about Trump tomorrow. I think that has helped him, to be honest.
Well, we'll see what the night will bring elsewhere. And while we're on the subject, there is a special podcast going out at God knows what time in the morning to discuss results, the emerging results. Let's hope we have a result at that stage of the American presidential election. So until then, have a very good evening.